This is your life, episode 54. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about what to do when you find yourself overcommitted. You know what I'm talking about. We've all been there. You may be there right now. We'll look at some strategies for dealing with this common problem and a whole lot more. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You can find out more at platformuniversity.com. If you're already a member, be sure and check out the new Backstage Pass video that we posted earlier this week. Oh my gosh. This members-only video provides a look behind the launch of Platform University itself. And the reason I'm excited about it is because it gives you the perspective of my team members, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if you've ever thought about starting a membership site, this is pure gold. Check it out at platformuniversity.com. A month ago, Gail and I spent a week in Florida, just the two of us. We had a fantastic time. It was a great vacation, but since then, things have gotten crazy. I did the live Q&A for Platform University. I had three speaking engagements in the last 3 weeks. In addition to that, we observed Orthodox Holy Week, which meant two church services a day, every day for a week. We held the SCORE conference in Orlando, and I hosted the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast last Friday in Atlanta. In the meantime, I'm working on a new book, writing my blog posts, recording my podcast. And it's been, or could have been, overwhelming to me. And I don't know if you've ever found yourself in that situation, surely you have, but feeling like you have too much work and not enough margin. And I've probably had four conversations on this very topic in the last 2 days. But surprisingly for me, even in the midst of a very busy season, I've not felt overwhelmed. I've had plenty of time for my family, my own personal development, actually, last week pretty much nuked my morning routine, but I'm back on it this week. But this has not always been the case, I can assure you. There have been times in my past when I felt utterly overwhelmed. In fact, I usually go through this experience at least twice a year, but the duration and the intensity has lessened over time. I'm getting better with age, thankfully. Well, in this podcast, I want to share with you 8 strategies I've used to reduce my commitments, create more margin, and feel like I'm once again in control of my life. So here we go. 8 strategies. Strategy number 1, accept responsibility. If I'm overcommitted and feeling overwhelmed, I have to acknowledge I'm in this state because I made these commitments. No one forced me. No one held a gun to my head. And as long as I'm the victim or playing the victim, I'm powerless to change. But the truth is, I have a choice, and so do you. I can decline the work, I can delegate it, or at the very least, I can negotiate the deadlines. But as long as you're blaming someone else for your sense of being overcommitted and overwhelmed, you're not going to get back that sense of control. It begins with strategy number 1, accepting responsibility. Strategy number 2, confront my fears. You know, so often I overcommit because I'm afraid to say no. Sometimes I'm just afraid of disappointing someone, or getting fired, or not having enough work, or missing an opportunity. Look, I'm a recovering people pleaser, and I readily admit it. This is a constant temptation for me, and maybe it is for you. But for me, being brave is often looking someone in the eye and just saying, no, I can't do it all. I want to make sure I'm setting my priorities, not someone else. And the only way I can do that is to confront my fears. Strategy number 3, reduce the drama. You know, if I'm honest, I have to admit, I often get overcommitted because it makes me feel important. In other words, it meets my need for significance. So rather than dialing the intensity down, I sometimes dial it up. And this often shows up in my language. I might be prone to say things like, I'm going crazy, or I'm about to lose my mind, or I feel so out of control, or if something doesn't change, I'm going to have a breakdown, or I'm about to go off the rails. Well, I may not say these things out loud, but they're still part of my internal dialogue, and this kind of hyperbole, and that's exactly what it is not helpful. And I found it to be amazingly helpful, though, just to dial down the intensity of my language and be more thoughtful with my word choices, avoiding this kind of extreme language. It just gets me all jacked up and, I'm not able to deal with it in a calm and steady place. So strategy number three is reduce the drama. Strategy number four, keep it in perspective. You know, when I find myself overcommitted, I have to recognize that this is likely a season. You know, it's not something I'm going to have to put up with for the rest of my life. It's not a sentence. I'll get through it. Really, I will. I just need to take a deep breath and acknowledge that this too shall pass. Just last week, as I was leaving the SCORE conference to attend the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast, my manager, Joy Grobably, said to me, just think, in less than 48 hours, you'll be done and on your way home. She has no idea, I'm sure, how much that shifted my perspective and helped me get through a very intense 2 days. So strategy number four, keep it in perspective. Strategy number five, triage my calendar. Overcommitment is ultimately a calendar issue. It means I don't have any white space or margin on my calendar. It's been eaten up with appointments. If you're in this situation, perhaps you can negotiate your way out of some commitments in order to buy yourself some additional time. Believe me, I think it's important to keep my commitments, but that doesn't mean I can't request a release, ask for an extension, or delegate the project to someone else. But I've got to triage my calendar if I'm going to reclaim some margin and get my life back to a sustainable level of activity. So strategy number five, triage my calendar. Strategy number six, do the next most important task. You know, worrying about everything I must get done is, frankly, unproductive. It only creates anxiety. Yes, my workload may look impossible, but why dwell on that? Instead, I'm trying to focus on the next most important thing and keep moving. I try not to get ahead of myself. I've memorized Matthew 6:34, where Jesus said, "Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." And that's been true for me. So why worry about it? Just focus on the next most important thing. And when I finish that, I can focus on the next most important thing. That's strategy number six. Strategy number seven, get sufficient rest. I don't know about you, but I can tackle almost anything provided I've had a good night's sleep. And when I get tired, as my wife can attest, I lose perspective. I also find it difficult to focus and become easily distracted. 2 hours in the morning after a good night's sleep are way more productive for me than 2 hours at night when I'm worn out and trying to grind it out. When I have to choose between two competing priorities, like getting enough rest or getting up and exercising, I always choose rest. Now, if I had a tendency to be lazy, it might be a different story, but no one has ever accused me of being lazy. But when I'm rested, I'm much more resourceful. I'm more focused. I'm less distracted. I'm more likely to get something done more efficiently and more quickly. So strategy number seven, get sufficient rest. And finally, strategy number eight, decide to change. You know, at the end of the day, it's up to me and it's up to you. No one else is going to take responsibility for building margin into my life, and that's probably not going to happen to you either. In fact, everyone around you is probably trying to figure out how to get more of you. And this doesn't make them bad people. It's just the way things work. But to move away from being overcommitted and feeling overwhelmed, you must establish boundaries and enforce them, or you'll soon find yourself in the same situation. Now, if you struggle with this, I highly recommend that you read Boundaries, When to Say Yes, When to Say No, to Take Control of Your Life by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend. And there's a link in the show notes. And by the way, Henry has just published a brand new book that I can't wait to read. I've downloaded it, but I have not read it yet, but it looks terrific. It's called Boundaries for Leaders, Results relationships, and being ridiculously in charge. Love the subtitle on that one. I really believe these 8 strategies can make a huge difference in your life if you adopt them and you're dealing with feeling overcommitted or overwhelmed. 1, accept responsibility. 2, confront your fears. 3, reduce the drama. 4, keep it in perspective. 5, triage your calendar. 6, do the next most important task. 7, get sufficient rest. And 8, decide to change. You know, adopting these strategies doesn't mean you won't get overcommitted from time to time. I still do. But I better understand the dynamics and what to do about it when it happens. So let's get to some listener questions. The first one comes from Adam.
Hi, Michael. This is Adam Rico from Sacramento, California, and I blog at workyouenjoy.com. So, Michael, my question is, what's a good way to manage your own stress and anxiety about being overcommitted so you can still keep your commitments but not damage your own well-being in the long run? I look forward to your response and really enjoyed the podcast. Thanks, Michael. Take care.
Adam, I think the first step is acknowledging that that kind of overcommitment and the stress that comes with it is not sustainable. It will destroy your relationships. It will destroy your health. It'll have a negative impact on your career. So something has to be done and you have to be proactive. Don't wait for a breakdown. And a lot of people are passive with regard to this. You know, they just don't deal with it. You know, they wait till there's a divorce or a breach in a relationship or they have a health crisis. That's not the time to deal with this. Acknowledge this is not sustainable. Lots of bad things happen when you get too much stress going on for too long a period of time. And it really takes its toll on the things that are the most important to you and to me. So that's what I would do is just get after it and make a change. The next question comes from Caleb.
Hi, Michael. This is Caleb from Ukraine, and I blog about faith at sukofamily.org. I would like to know how to deal with overcommitment when you are in a culture, either a business culture or ministry culture, that values busyness and long hours as sort of a sign of success and looks down upon people who want to focus on a few things and have some balance in their life. How do you tactfully deal with those relationships? Look forward to your response. Thanks, Michael.
Caleb, this is an outstanding question, and I've been exactly in this situation before. And you may not be able to change things above you, but you can definitely change the culture below you, particularly if you're willing to be courageous and stand up to that kind of culture. And one of the ways that you can do that is by changing the conversation. It's really not about how many hours people are at work, because the truth is that work expands to fill the time allotted for it. But one of the things that we can do is start focusing and direct the conversation to start focusing on the results we're delivering, not the time we're spending to deliver those results. And I think just to be open about it and say, look, this kind of culture that we're creating as leaders is not sustainable. It's going to take its toll on us. It's going to take its toll on our people. And so we've got to figure this out. We've got to use some of our creativity. We've got to change the culture as leaders by changing our behavior, because that, more than anything else, is what changes culture. And I think this is a great time just for us all to remind ourselves that what we do, what we say, is creating a cascading kind of an effect below us on the culture that we're trying to create. And we realize that as leaders, we're always creating culture. It's happening constantly. And that's why we've got to be very careful that we're modeling what we want others to follow. I remember talking to a colleague of mine years ago, and I think I may have even mentioned it in this podcast, but he would work till 7 or 8 at night. And it was, for him, he thought, sustainable because he enjoyed work. His kids were grown and they were away from home. But the problem was that it was impacting all the younger people that he was leading who had small children and weren't there to have dinner with him, to put him to bed, to make those important family connections that are so critical and are all too brief. And so I just exhorted him over and over again, you've got to change. This is not sustainable. You may be able to endure it, which I doubt, by the way, but it's going to have a negative impact on the people you're trying to lead. So don't be that kind of leader. You may not ultimately be able to change the other leaders. You may ultimately have to leave that culture if it's toxic, but you can at least try to change the conversation and see if you can change the behavior of the group so that you can change the culture. The next question comes from Eddie.
Hi, Michael. It's Eddie Cliff here from Melbourne, Australia. And I blog my advice for high school students at vcefeed.com. Thanks for your great podcast. My question is this. If I decide to reduce my overwhelm by dropping a commitment or leaving an organization that I'm part of, what can I do for that organization to ensure the best possible outcome and a sustainable future for the organization? Thanks.
Eddie, let me suggest that you listen to my podcast, episode 41, 7 Actions to Take Before You Quit Your Job. Because in that podcast, I talk about a way basically to leave a situation like you're describing, but to do it in a way that honors the people that you're leaving and leaves the bridge intact, leaves the door open, whatever metaphor you want to use, so that if you would choose to go back later or want to do business in a different context, you still have that option. I think it's entirely possible, and I think it's a great question to ask because sometimes you're in a situation where there's no other option if you're going to preserve your own sanity and protect the things that you value the most. Great question. The next one comes from Jason.
Hi, Michael. This is Jason Nicholas from Oak Ridge, New Jersey. I blog and post my sketches at www.jasonjnicholas.com. Overcommitted? Yikes. I know that feeling way too well. I am a husband, father, architect, full-time employee, blogger, artist, improv actor, volunteer, and president-elect of my Rotary Club. I definitely need to perform some major triage in my life. I was thinking of letting go of the Rotary Club. I will be taking over as the new kid on the block in July. It is a club where members have been there a long time and are definitely set in their ways. I've already experienced some grumblings on things I've slated for my new year. Does a true leader step away from overcommitment? I feel that I would be losing out on a great opportunity to develop my leadership skills. It's going to take a lot of my time and energy to do so. I'm not afraid to try, but by eliminating this responsibility, my overcommitment list in life would definitely feel a lot lighter. Any feedback on this would be great. I love who you are and the wisdom that you share. You are simply awesome. Thank you so much for your time and have a fantastic day.
Jason, thanks for your kind words. I think this is challenging for leaders because the more successful you become, the more opportunities present themselves. But leadership is all about choices. You've got to choose increasingly, not between the good and the bad, but between the better and the good. And you can't do everything. One question you might want to just ask yourself, and this would be worth some reflection time, is what is driving this need to do so much? And I already admitted at the top of the show that my need for significance is what drives a lot of this kind of behavior for me, getting overcommitted, feeling like, you know, gosh, people need me and, you know, aren't I doing a wonderful thing and I really need to be helpful and all this. And you kind of develop this almost messianic complex. And, you know, I'm not saying that's you. I'm saying this is me. You need to get to the bottom of what it is that's driving this behavior on your part. But I think to recognize that you can't do everything, and in a world where you have to establish priorities, particularly as a leader, what are the things that you absolutely will not jettison? And what are the things that when push comes to shove, what would you get rid of? I promise you, if you had a heart attack, there'd be stuff that you would throw out the window in a heartbeat. No pun intended. You wouldn't think about it. And my guess is that this Rotary commitment, as worthy as it may be, and as much as you may enjoy it, and as much as you could get out of it, is one of those things, given your season in life right now, that probably just doesn't make sense for you. And again, I don't know, only you can answer that, but you can't do everything. That's a fact. So if that's the truth, then what can you do and do well and still have enough margin that you sustain the things that are the most important to you, like your family? The next question comes from KC.
Hi, Michael. This is KC Proctor. My website is kcproctor.com, and I'm from Seattle, and I'm a hardworking dad. I have 3 kids. I get up very early, 3 a.m. to work out. I have a full-time job. I work on the weekends at our church. And so my time is very precious and is a very limited resource. And I struggle with feeling overwhelmed at times. How do you endure a season of hustle without getting burnout? Thank you so much for all you do. I appreciate your blog and your book. Thanks for taking my question.
Casey, if it's truly a season, I think usually you can power through it. At least that's my experience. If I can see light at the end of the tunnel, I can just muscle through it and get to the other side. Frankly, that's what I did last week with the SCORE conference and the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast. I just had a week of very busy activity, but I knew that it wasn't going to go on forever. And if I could just muscle through it, I'd get to the other side. And here I am today recording this episode. The problem is that sometimes we don't make those systemic changes we need to make to change the way things are getting on their calendar and the way that we're allocating our time. And in those situations, we convince ourselves that something is temporary when unfortunately it really is permanent because we're not taking the time to really think through it, or we don't have the courage to make the tough calls and make the decisions that we need to make. So if it's truly something temporary and you do see light at the end of the tunnel, and this is, you know, kind of a blip on the monitor and not something that's going to go on forever, then great. Power through it to the best of your ability. Get to the other side. Try to give yourself some time to recover and you'll be fine. On the other hand, if this is going to go on forever, I don't know of a method to power through that. It's not going to be healthy and you've got to make some decisions. Hope that's helpful. Next question comes from Mike.
Hey, Michael, this is Mike Burns from Phoenix, Arizona, and I blog at theothersideofcomplexity.com. At our blog, we talk a lot about decluttering your life, your physical spaces, your brain space, your calendar, so that you can focus on your priorities. When it comes to managing your commitments and your schedule, I was just curious to see if you had kind of a rule of thumb that you use for what percentage of your day you actually plan activities and appointments versus the amount of time you allow for margin for those things that happen to come up throughout the day. And I also recognize that it may be different for you now than it was when you were in a day-to-day office situation. So I'd love to hear what you have to say about those things. Thanks, Michael.
Great question, Mike. One of the things that I've tried to do is to design what I call an ideal week. In other words, if I had 100% control of all the variables that go into structuring my calendar on a given week, how would I organize it? And one of the ways that I do it is try to come up with daily themes so that I'm really balanced in terms of planning ahead and being intentional with how I'm allocating my time. For example, and this is current for me, and I'll give you a reference to a post here in a second, but my themes on Monday and Tuesday, I'm devoted to my blog and my podcast, and this is kind of the foundation of everything else I do. So that's Monday and Tuesdays. I don't take appointments on those days unless it's really an emergency. And then Wednesday and Thursday are devoted to special projects, and this will vary from season to season. And for the next few months, I'm focusing on writing my new book, also preparing for outside speaking. Friday is my day for appointments. You know, I'm in a situation right now where I kind of have this as a luxury, but that's really the only day I take appointments. And I took a page from my friend Don Miller, who talked about that and how much more productive that made him as a writer. And it really has worked for me. Saturday is for personal chores, recreation. Sunday is for worship, rest, and planning in the next week. And if you want to look this up on my blog, I've got a post that's called How to Create More Margin in Your Life. And there's a link in the show notes, but that gives you an example and also an Excel spreadsheet that you can use to plan out your ideal week as well. I think you'll find it really helpful to think of your work in terms of that. The next question also comes from Mike, but another Mike.
Hi, Michael. My name is Mike Kim. I blog at mikekim.tv. Currently, I work full-time as chief marketing officer of an educational company. I'm also lead pastor of a church and also a speaker and consultant. And I don't feel overcommitted yet, but the success I've had in these areas is pulling for more of my time. I love all of these things, but I'm concerned something I'll have to give sooner or later. Do you have any advice? Thanks so much.
You know, my best advice, Mike, is to have a list, literally a written list of priorities that can guide your decision-making and how you allocate your time. I talk about this in my Life Plan book, that resource that you can get for free if you subscribe to my blog. And there's a link in the show notes to that, but it's basically get this ebook for free called Creating Your Personal Life Plan. And the second step of that is creating a set of clearly identified priorities, and I have you write those out. Now, life never unfolds that neatly, but it creates a set of guiding principles that will help you with the decision-making so that you don't get in that situation where you're overcommitted because you don't know the relative value of one thing vis-a-vis something else. But if you have priorities, you're always able to establish that and you're in a better position to to say no to the things that don't matter as much as the things you need to say yes to. The next question comes from Peg.
Hi, Michael. My name is Peg Doyle. I am owner of Wellness and You in Westwood, Mass., and I am at wellnessandyou.com. And my question is about being overcommitted. I feel like I'm overcommitted or system deficient in terms of how I get my long-range work done. The day-to-day seems to always take over. So I'm wondering if you could address that. Thank you very much.
Peg, I don't want to be redundant with repeating what I've already said, but let me give you a new idea. And one of the things that I picked up on your question was you talked about being system deficient. And let me just suggest a system, if you haven't got into it, or way of thinking about your day-to-day tasks that I think might make you more efficient, where you can get on top of the day-to-day a little bit more so that you can get your head above the clouds and begin to focus on the long term. Actually, two books. One is Getting Things Done by David Allen. And it's a great book for just the way we think about task management and the importance of getting things out of our head so that we can free ourselves up with psychic RAM to deal with the long-term kinds of issues that you're thinking about. Another book that will help you with systems, and I love this book, it's by Michael Gerber. It's called The E-Myth Revisited. The E-Myth stands for the entrepreneurial myth. And he talks about why small businesses fail and what they need to do to succeed, and a way of thinking about your business that enables you to work on the business and not just in the business, so you're developing a business that can run without your constant attention. The last question comes from Tor.
Hi, Michael. This is Tor Constantino calling from just outside of Washington, D.C. This topic of overcommitment, it's very close to home. I tend to be a people pleaser, which means that I tend to overcommit when I think that I've got the abilities and the skills. But then from a timing perspective, sometimes I just run out of time. So having said that, is there a way that you found or that you recommend that when you do overcommit to a couple of different parties and there might be a schedule conflict, is there a way that you have found that allows you to gracefully kind of back out of one of the commitments, and how do you make that decision as far as which ones to respectfully decline? Hope this makes sense, and again, thanks for the opportunity. Bye.
Well, I don't think after you've accepted a commitment, you can respectfully decline, not with integrity, because you've given your word to that thing. Now you can negotiate out of it. You can negotiate a release. You can extend the deadline. There's lots of things that you can do, but I've always found that when I'm in that situation, I've double booked myself or I've gotten into something that was way more than I intended to. The only thing to do is to be honest, to go to the other party and just say, look, I had no idea what I was getting into. I wonder if we could consider some other possible solutions. And usually, almost in every case, other people are willing to do that. But you've got to be honest, and then you can't get away with that very often, because eventually people say, you're either not good at following through on what you committed to, or you're just incompetent in doing it. And, you know, neither of those are good. So I would just encourage you to be honest, to purpose. You're not going to get yourself in that situation again, and see if you can negotiate your way out of it. But definitely do not go to them and just say, hey, look, I told you I was going to do that, but I'm going to respectfully decline. No, you already accepted it. You already gave your word to it, and you need to fulfill your word even when it's difficult. That's my viewpoint. That's one of my values. And I do it even when it's inconvenient or it's tough to do. I'm going to fulfill my word or negotiate out of it. Let me leave you with this question on the podcast. What do you need to do now to keep yourself from getting overcommitted in the future? And to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/054, as in episode 54. Few announcements. If you're considering launching your own platform, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. This isn't as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. The screencast is absolutely free. You can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. There's a link in the show notes. I also include a special discount code just for my podcast listeners and blog readers. It will enable you to get a hosting account for just $3.95 a month. That's all. Second announcement. We have just opened registration for the launch conference, September 16 through 19 at the beautiful Sebastian Hotel in Vail, Colorado. Whether you're a professional speaker or just want to be, this conference will teach you how to start where you are and take your business, your speaking business, to the next level. We also explain how to make more money speaking. Specifically, we teach you a powerful four-part framework that enables you to discover your assets, design your products, develop your market, and determine your value. This is the conference that launched me into my professional speaking career, and I found it incredibly helpful, so much so that I became a business partner with Ken Davis, who is the founder of Launch. You can find out more at launchconference.tv. There's a link in the show notes. But register now and get in on the early bird discount, which is going to be expiring soon. And then let me just finally talk about the next episode. It's going to be on the topic of how to read a nonfiction book. Yes, you can get so much more out of your reading. I guarantee it. And in the next episode, I'm going to share 10 tips with you. If you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it just as I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. If you've already done that, thank you for doing so. If not, I'd be grateful because it creates visibility for the podcast so that people who have not discovered it yet might get turned on to it. If you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com. To the show notes for this episode, you can scroll down to the comments section, and I'd love to hear from you on whatever you'd like to comment on with regard to this episode. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is